Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North. We are in full festival swing in Milwaukee. This weekend is the annual celebration of all things Italian, also known as Festa Italiana. And in between bocce games, gondola rides, and fast Ferraris, you can also find special guests like internationally renowned chef Maria Liberati. Liberati is an award-winning author and blogger of the Basic Art of Italian Cooking series, and the newest one is called Da Vinci Style. Yeah, that Da Vinci. It turns out, in addition to painting and inventing, Da Vinci was also quite the gourmet. Liberati's book focuses on the history and food of the regions that Da Vinci lived in. It's both a history and a cookbook. Ahead of her appearances in Milwaukee this weekend, Liberati joins me in the studio now to talk about the inspiration for her book. Maria, welcome to Lake Effect. It is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, it's so nice to be here also, and I always enjoy and look forward to my time in coming to Milwaukee every year for Festa.
How many times? How long has it been?
Let's see. This is the third year, so I was here last year for Festa last year, and then 2 years ago for my first Festa. So,
and what makes it different for you?
What makes each year different?
Yeah, coming here to Festa, is it different from other festivals?
Oh, yes, it is. It's gigantic. I think people are really crazy about their Festa here. You know, in other cities in the country that I've done these types of Festas, they're kind of big, but this seems to be like the biggest one I've been to in the U.S. And people are, they really go crazy with this Festa, crazy in a good way. So I find a lot of heart in the city, you know, in this whole Festa thing. And I just really enjoy it. I really look forward to it.
Well, we're so glad to have you back.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And this time you have a new book,
yes.
A new cookbook, The Basic Art of Italian Cooking. But the twist on this one is it's Da Vinci style. And what you did is take the life of Leonardo da Vinci and translate it and interpret it in food.
Yes.
And I wanted to know where that came from. What a great idea, first of all. But what made you think of doing the book this way?
Well, it came from my love of Leonardo da Vinci. And when I'm in Italy, because I live both in Italy and the U.S., we have a farm in Abruzzo. So I go back and forth. And luckily, you know, being in Italy, you can get more intensely involved in studying about him. There's so much more there. And I found out that Leonardo da Vinci was truly a foodie. And that was another dimension among all the other things that he was, you know, philosopher and writer and scientist and architect and politician
artist,
exactly. I forgot about that one. That was the most important. But anyway, he was a foodie, and he had his beginnings in food because his mother, his real mother, who couldn't marry his father because they had him out of wedlock, and she was a lower kind of a class system than he was, her family had a bakery. And even though his real father married someone else, the real father used to let him go and spend time at his real mother's bakery with his real grandfather. And he started doing sculptures out of marzipan. That was his first artistic sort of tendencies. And then his father saw all of this artistic stuff coming out in him, you know, his artistic talent. And his father enrolled him in a school in Florence, Andrea Verrocchio's workshop, who was famous for teaching all these very famous artists. Anyway, Da Vinci ended up putting together a restaurant with Botticelli. Sandro Botticelli was studying with Da Vinci at Verrocchio's workshop, and they needed a way to make ends meet and support themselves when they became late in their later teens. So first of all, Da Vinci worked as a waiter in a restaurant. And he started getting more and more into it because one night all the chefs died because they of food poisoning, and they turned over the head chef position to Leonardo da Vinci. And it worked for a little while, but it didn't go over well because he had these forward ideas of how food should be served. He wanted to do the nouveau cuisine, small portions, very fancy, and people just weren't used to that. So clients started little by little leaving this restaurant, and they ended up firing him. So he got the idea for him and Botticelli to open their own restaurant.
Now, there you go. Botticelli and Da Vinci opening
imagine?
A restaurant.
Can you imagine?
I can't even. It's like it's so funny.
Yes. Yes, and right on Ponte Vecchio, which is – it was right there. Again, it didn't last too long because they had all these artistic ideas. You know, they drew out a menu, and you can actually find one of the menus. It's floating around online. It's very artistic, so people couldn't really understand what they were talking about and all. And they had the same idea of serving small portions, very nouveau sort of cuisine thing, which didn't go over big because back then people were used to just eating these lump portions of everything.
If they were going out at all.
Yes, if they were going out at all. Exactly. So they would, you know what, they would be mostly people that were traveling for work. So it's not like people, you know, just went out on a weekend to eat. So they were not people that were really into the nouveau cuisine and things. So anyway, obviously that restaurant did not last long and it closed, but he ended up inventing a lot of things or the beginnings of a lot of the utensils that we use in the kitchen. And he then went on to be commissioned by other like members of the royal family to make different things. And he ended up with the King of France, who eventually made him in charge of his kitchen as well as an architect for projects. And he actually designed his kitchen and he designed some really very interesting aspects of the kitchen. So without going on and on and on, you know, these are all the things that I started to find out. And in fact, there were just so many facts and I had to get the book ready. So a lot of all these other facts that are on the side, I didn't even put in that book. I'm intending to put in a revised version because there was just so much stuff. It was just so fascinating. I would just get so wrapped up in it that it's like, okay, I have to pull myself away now. You're doing a book and you got to get it done by a certain time.
Well, and you're doing a cookbook.
Yes.
And you have to actually get the recipes in. But what I loved about it is the way you juxtapose the bits of history.
Yes.
With the recipes that represented either the time that where he was or the place where he was. How was it for you as the cookbook side of you now, not the historian side of you, the cookbook writer, to choose those recipes? I mean, it must have been difficult to pick.
Yes, it was difficult. And I always, my own philosophy has always been that food is more than just a recipe. There's so much more, especially Italian cooking, attached to food. So one of the reasons I chose to do that to coordinate the stories of where he went to with the food is because I've never felt that you can just have recipes in a book. Food, there's so much more meaning to it, and I think you need to bring that out. So all of my books have stories like that bring out something more about the dish. But as far as your question about picking out the recipes, yes, it was very difficult to kind of pick and choose which ones. I just tried to choose the ones that I felt were more representative of those regions, because you're right, the recipes from the specific regions that he stopped at. It's found that most of the regions that he stopped at were places, if he spent a long time there, it's because he liked the food. So he didn't like Bologna that much because they have very heavy cuisine. And historians have said that he was a vegetarian. So he wasn't really too fond of Bologna because Bologna has – their cuisine is really heavy on meat. But anyway, so it was difficult picking the recipes, but I tried to pick ones that were really – that kind of told a story, more of the history of that place, because I think that it makes the recipes more interesting when you know you're creating something. It's already been created, but you're making something that has so much more to it than just, you know, a bunch of ingredients you're throwing together and that's it.
Well, there's a context to
it.
There's some sort of historical background, something that you can say, well, you know, they made it this way in 1500.
Exactly.
One of the things you talk about is the use of stale bread and the fact that Italians don't throw away food. Mm-hmm. If they can avoid it, they're going to find a way to use it, even if it's quote unquote spoiled, because it probably isn't spoiled.
Right.
It just needs to be used in a different way. Mm-hmm. And the use of the bread, I didn't know about using the bread to thicken a sauce.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a number of recipes that take the stale bread and you cook it down into a sauce and it makes a soup or it makes...
Yes. And you know, those recipes are from what was known as the Cucina Povera, which means the peasant kitchen. When the Italians, I mean, they were basically walking around barefooted, didn't have enough money for shoes. So they had to do what you just said. They had to keep those ingredients and just reuse them as much as they can. Their bread is made from really high quality ingredients. So it generally doesn't spoil. oil as quickly as, say, a loaf of regular American bread. So you can hold it and use it and reuse it. And it was very innovative, the things they were thinking of, you know, to do, like you said, thicken a sauce with the bread. And they do all kinds of cakes and salads reusing this bread. However, one of the funniest things is that a lot of the most expensive restaurants now use these recipes from what they used to consider a peasant kitchen. You know, the Papa al Pomodoro, which is just what you're talking about, where it's a tomato soup that comes from Tuscany and it's thickened with the bread. I just went to an expensive restaurant in New York City for a dinner for the consortium of the Chianti makers. And one of the recipes was, and that's a normal thing, Papa al Pomodoro that they serve there. It was actually quite good. It said that back in history, the Florentine women from Florence, the Tuscan women, they love their husbands so much, so they wanted to, you know, they put passion into what they were cooking for them and heart. And that's how they really put their mind to, how am I going to make these wonderful dishes for my husband with using, you know, we don't have the money for these fancy ingredients. And they spent a lot of time on thinking these things that, you know, that seem like, you know, they're kind of almost simple, stupid things. You know, like, who would have thought of that? It's just so simple. But you would have to spend time, because you're right. You wouldn't. Who would have thought that bread would thicken, you know, would thicken
and
a
cook
soup?
Down that basically that you wouldn't taste the bread. It would just
right.
become a thickening
you would
agent.
Think, yeah. Right. You would think it would be the soppy bread. But, you know, it's unbelievable. But, yes, they spent loads of time on what they did. Da Vinci did the same thing. He would sit for hours until he just got it correct, whatever he was doing. You know, it kind of reminds me of that, the women that invented this peasant kitchen. There are all these recipes, just as we're talking about using the bread for that. And they do cakes like that, too. It's just unbelievable. You know, they come up with cakes where they're using the day-old bread or the bread that might be a week old, really. So it's just unbelievable the things that, you know, that they invented to do with that they're still doing now.
Well, the idea of, you know, farm to table and all of that is so popular now. But of course, they were doing that then in Italy and France, and because they had the fresh, I mean, if you didn't grow it, you probably didn't have it.
Yes, yes.
And so freshness, of course, plays a big role in this cookbook as well.
Yes.
Fresh ingredients, as fresh as you can possibly get.
Yes. Yes, that plays a role in all of my cookbooks, because I think that's also a key of real Italian, authentic Italian cooking. It's not that I think it is. It's the key to real Italian cooking is using the freshest and the best ingredients. And if you do, you don't need a lot of, say, Parmesan cheese, if you use that, you're not using the real Parmigiano Reggiano. If you use Parmigiano Reggiano, you should only use a little bit because you're getting the real flavor of it. If you use a substitute, then you do have to use a lot. So the idea is just small quantities, and you let the flavors work together and balance each other. And that's the, you know, the true sort of formula for the real authentic Italian cooking is balancing flavors, using the freshest and the best ingredients as well. So
when you talk to, like you're going to do here at Festa, you talk to people who are interested in cooking, they're home cooks.
Yes.
Maybe there's somebody who has never really dared to read a recipe like this and try to do something. How do you teach them? What do you tell them to do so that they're not afraid to go into the kitchen and try?
You know what? When I first did my very first book, what I did was I first tried out the recipes, because I was doing a lot of cooking programs in Italy because I spoke both Italian and English. So I was getting asked to do those when I first started out. What I did was I tested the recipes out on, you know, I wanted to make sure they could follow them. The one thing, though, about Italian cooking, it's not like French cooking. It's not complicated. It's really very simple. You know, I just tell them to try it. And also, you know, don't be so worried about getting the most perfect results and following everything exactly. Because really, Italian cooking also, you have to put a little of yourself in the recipe because you have to kind of feel, you actually feel the ingredients. But it, you know, it takes a while to be able to do that. So, you know, I always tell people to have fun with it because that's the most important thing. And just try the most simplest recipe, you know, learn how to cook pasta because there are people that are afraid to cook pasta. And usually people will, once they kind of get over that hump of like, oh, yeah, I can do this, then they'll usually go on to kind of trying the next. But Italian cooking is not as complicated as people think it is.
So basically, don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid. That's it. Don't be afraid. And you might even want to put a little bit of, when I say a little bit of yourself into it, you know, if you think you want to put more salt or more oregano or something, you know, do that because it's kind of, it's your recipe. Those are my recipes, but you might want a flavor to what you like. So, you know, have fun with it. Also, you can try and add something else or take something away depending on your taste, but definitely don't be afraid. And just the main thing is to start, you know, try the recipe. I've had one recipe, I'll tell you, linguine alla vongole, linguine with clams. I remember when I tried, because I think that's in my first book, when I tried it in a cooking program that I did, people were so afraid when I said we're going to do this linguine alla vongole. And it was like, people were, they were like so surprised. Wow, I did, you know, linguine with clams. And it's because it's just linguine pasta, clams, olive oil, garlic, a little bit of salt, a little bit of pepper, parsley. And that's basically linguine with clams. It's just that you have to, you know the time frame and all that and when to put whatever you need. You know, so it's really not complicated if you're not afraid to do it. You know, it's really
very easy. It was the clams that scared people. They don't know how to open them up.
Exactly. Yes. But it's really very simple also. Yes, yes.
So do you have a favorite recipe that you're going to be sharing with us here in Milwaukee this weekend?
Well, I have a lot of favorite ones, as you probably can figure out. But one of my favorite ones is I have this risotto that I do with porcini mushrooms and truffles. So, Parmigiano Reggiano. Yum. Yes. Yes. So I think we'll probably use truffle oil because if you don't have truffles and you only need like a real quick grating of truffles, because if you've ever had truffles, they're very pungent. So you only need just a teeny little pinch, but it adds so much flavor to it. So that's one of my really favorite recipes is that risotto. And then there's this torta. It's a cake that comes from Siena. It's called torta senese, which is kind of to describe it. It's almost like if you took rice pudding and made it as a cake. So, and it's really a traditional dish, which is in the book also from Siena. So those are my two. And they use rice because in the north, like when you get further away from the south, they're not that big into pasta as they are, you know, in
that's
the south.
That's where we get the risotto.
Yes, the risotto. Yeah. Exactly.
And both of those sound like Da Vinci would have loved them both because they were vegetarian and simple.
Yes, yes, they are. They're simple and basic and they use all fresh ingredients. So, and they're not any kind of ingredients other than obviously truffles, but you can get truffle oil now at many gourmet stores. So yes.
Well, you have my mouth salivating, just thinking about it. I've got the book sitting in front of me. Maria Liberati, it has been such a pleasure to meet you and welcome back to Milwaukee.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here again.
Maria Liberati is an award-winning author and expert on Italian cuisine and culture. Her most recent cookbook is The Basic Art of Italian Cooking, Da Vinci Style. Liberati is in Milwaukee this weekend at Festa Italiana. There is a link to her schedule from wuwm.com/lakeeffect. Coming up next, we'll speak with the author of a new short story collection, Quality Snacks, ahead of his appearance at Boswell Books tonight. You are listening to Lake Effect on WUWM. ¶¶